I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey, everybody, this is Max Albaumbach from Draft Sickos on the No Ceilings NBA Podcast Network. This week, the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament is kicking off, and I couldn't be more excited. In preparation for this event, I have a gigantic written preview that's going to be up on our website, NoCeilingsNBA.com, on Wednesday. In that preview, I've got words on every single player in the entire field, so stay tuned for that. Make sure you're subscribed to our Substack at NoCeilingsNBA.com. In the meantime, I've got the chance to sit down with some of the players in the field, so today, you are going to hear two interviews, the first of which is going to be with Quincy Oliveri from Xavier. He was one of the top scorers in the Big East this season, a very exciting scoring guard prospect. We're also going to hear an interview with Kyle Rode, sort of a very interesting, under-the-radar, high-feel shooter with size from Liberty. So two really interesting players, two great conversations. It was an absolute pleasure to speak with both of these guys. You can tell these are two guys that are going to do themselves favors when they sit down with teams. But they also both just have really interesting journeys. And getting to hear the story of the players right from the players' mouths is one of the coolest parts about this process for me. So stay tuned and enjoy these two prospect interviews with Quincy Oliveri and Kyle Rode. All right, welcome to a special prospect interview here on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed and YouTube channel. I am Max Albaumbach, and today I am joined by the scoring leader in the Big East this past season, Quincy Oliveri. Quincy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's a pleasure to have you here and pick your brain. You are in the field for the upcoming Portsmouth Invitational, so really excited to get a chance to talk to you here leading up in the days prior to the event. For people that are just kind of parachuting into the draft coverage, the NBA fans that maybe don't pay as much attention to college basketball, how would you describe your game to someone who's never seen you before?
I would just say I'm an electric scorer, microwave scorer that can really shoot from deep, and I bring a lot of energy to the game. Say I like to pride myself on shooting, so that's one thing. And then my energy, I think, is second to none.
Absolutely. I would agree with that 100%. I always like to start kind of at the very beginning. What was the thing that got you into basketball growing up?
Just hanging with my dad. You know, my dad used to watch a lot of sports growing up and just kind of always wanted the life of my dad liked. And he used to work for like Hawks media coverage and do stuff with the Hawks and follow a lot of sports. So just watching sports in his office or going to a Hawks game and having to work that, just being around that definitely is what got me into it. And that it started at a young age, about like 4 or 5. Mm-hmm.
Were there guys that you like really liked as players you kind of latched onto during that time at all?
Oh, I mean, for sure. Joe Johnson, mm-hmm. I mean, as I got older, it was Jamal Crawford. Just like I was a huge Hawks guy, so
for sure,
Derek Johnson was like the first Hawk. My dad used to bring back these bobbleheads we would get from the radio station. I think it was called 690, the Fan. And I remember when he got a Joe Johnson bobblehead, it meant the world to me because I was a player growing up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was great. That was a fun era for Hawks basketball. Him, Josh Smith, like that kind of era for the team. Yeah, that's great.
That's when they called it the Highlight Factory.
Yeah. Those are fun teams. I'm from like the Chicago area originally, and I remember like they had like a really fun playoff series around the like against the D Rose Bulls like around that same time, and I just remember being like, man, like I like this Hawks team. Yeah. Like it's one of those things. I'm pulling for the Bulls, but this Hawks team's really fun. What was your like playing career like and stuff like that prior to college, and what was your recruitment like kind of coming out?
So prior to college, it was very under the radar. Mm-hmm. I wasn't heavily recruited at all. I honestly, like, basketball, it didn't look like I would ever have any opportunity of playing basketball past high school up until, let me say, my last summer of AAU.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I played for the Atlanta Celtics with Coach Emery, and then we broke off and we became D-Favor Celtics, and then we became ATL Hoops. And I trained every day. I worked out every day. I could shoot the ball, but I hardly, when it came to AAU, I was the last off the bench. I was the person that kind of picked up full court, never really scored, and then I was sitting in the corner. And it was like, it didn't look good, you know, for a while. That I need to look up academic scholarships because it didn't look like I was getting athletic scholarship. I ran cross country at the time, and I was really good at cross country. People were telling me I should stick with cross country, but I just loved basketball. And it was tough, you know, because like I said, my mom didn't think I would play college basketball. It was just me and my dad, honestly, that kind of just stuck with it every day after practice, getting shots up, and him just reminding me to continue to have fun and always enjoy the game and never get too stressed out. Just kind of motivate me with little things like that. I remember specifically one time he knew I didn't like score a lot, but he told me, I was like, I think I might've been 11, 12. Mm-hmm. Like if you go out here and play super hard and I think get like 4 rebounds and score like 8 points, I'll take you to the library.
yeah.
That he would do to kind of keep me motivated, to kind of keep the game fun. And you know, I owe a lot of what I have now to my dad, because like I said, it was a while that for a long time it did not look like I would be anything as far as basketball goes, because I was really smart in school, but I was never getting the looks that I have now. And coming out of high school, I was only recruited by Rice and Cornell. Cornell wasn't full ride, but I was about to commit to Cornell because Rice was
basketball.
Not,
yeah.
they weren't that serious. Like,
okay.
They kept like beating around the bush and kind of like trying to keep me at bay. And Cornell wanted me, and I was about to commit to Cornell Saturday on my visit at dinner. And someone just told me not to. And I went to Rice and committed the following week, and the rest is history. But I was not highly recruited. I most definitely worked for everything that I have, and I know the grind, because I started from the bottom of the bottom. Like,
people
don't even know that my freshman year of high school, I was a manager for the varsity team because I just wanted to hang around varsity and just be around the highest level.
That's really cool. I wouldn't have guessed that. Like, I don't know, like something about like you can play with a certain level of dominance at that time at times. And like when guys have that game, I always just kind of assume that it's always been a little bit easy for them in a sense. You know what I mean? Like that's really cool. I would not have guessed that it was that kind of rough of a climb. But you are a guy that like improved substantially throughout college. Like your freshman season at Rice, you know, it was more of a role, you know, 14 minutes a game. And then slowly you started to tick up. I remember like in our crew at No Ceilings, like midway through your college career, Tyler Metcalf on our crew was like, hey, start paying attention to this Quincy Oliveri guy. Like, that's like when I remember you like starting to hit your stride. What was your progression like there? Because it shows up on the stat sheet, but like we don't see the full picture. We're just watching games and seeing numbers. So what took you from like guy who plays 15 minutes a game to like guy who can really fill it up and is a really key part of this team?
That COVID summer, spring, it was the most focused, confident, determined, goal-oriented me that I had ever been. Like, I just remember after that, like, coming back and just seeing what college was like, and I was like, nah, I can – mentally, I was already telling myself, like, I can kill. Like, I can come in here and dominate. Like, I would sit on the back of the bus and just dream about me dominating, or I would go to sleep, and before I go to sleep, I'd dream about me dominating. I'd be in class, and just before we got sent home, like, after the season, I'm like, bro, I can come. I know I can go in there and score 30 and hit a big three and get the crowd lit. Or I can, out of a timeout, get the ball and get a buck. Like, I was just thinking about, I know I can dominate. Mm-hmm. And so we went home, and slowly but surely things started to fall apart there as far as, like, Drew transferred, Trey transferred. And a lot of – I would just scroll on Twitter, and I'd be like, John Rothstein would say – you know, so-and-so just left Rice. Coach Perry has a big void. He has big shoes to fill. What's he going to do? And I'm like, nah, it's me. Like,
yeah.
Like, and I would tell myself, like, no, it's going to be me. Mm-hmm. And that summer, spring, I would go out. I would work out in the morning. And I would work out with Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf in the morning.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I would go train with my strength coach, Coach Jamal. Then after that, I had a goal in my backyard. When I've had that since I was a little kid, and it was a while where I would be like, man, like, I can't move this goal by myself. I need my dad. And I just remember one day I was like, no, I'm just gonna try to move it by myself. And I moved everything by myself. And when I did that, it was, I don't know why, it was like a sense of accomplishment for me, because I was able to move the basketball goal, the plate, and the two big pots of plants to the front yard by myself, and it just stayed there the whole summer. And after that, every afternoon, I would go out there, just work on in the shot clock moves, in the game moves, just go out there and freestyle, just have fun, just shoot, you know, like, get the ball and just throw it to the corner and shoot a corner three, fading out of bounds. If I missed it or if I made it, sometimes if I made it, it would hit the bottom of the rim and just go all the way down the street. Mm-hmm. And I would go chase it and do it again. I was just having fun. Just 3-2. I was just doing stuff like that. And it was just like that summer, I was so determined to come back a dog. And I just remember I told my shrimp coach, I was like, it's going to be without a doubt that next year I'm going to be the best player on the team, that I was who they were missing. Like, it was no need to look for a transfer. It was no need to sulk that Trey Murphy or Drew Pearson left, because I'm here. Like, I'm going to do that. I was running miles every day. I was doing everything in my power. I came back. I left Rice at, I think, 198 or 196.
Yeah.
And I was, like, bulky, like, stocky. Mm-hmm. That summer, I was like, nah. I came back. I was 189. I was 4% body fat. It was the best I ever felt. Now, I was skinny now.
Yeah.
But – condition-wise, spring-wise, just like twitch muscles. Like, I did the jump attack program by Tim Grover. It not only changed my body, but it changed my mental. My mentality was like, nobody worked harder than me. I fought through this. I remember doing these workouts, this training, and I failed at one point, but it didn't break me, you know. Like, nobody's gonna come out here and outwork me. I know I can come out here and kill. And I owe a lot of my success.
Out. Yeah.
That spring/summer, like, I can't even tell you, like, how, like, describing it now and being on the opposite side of it. Like, I went in there, I set a goal. And when I came, I started coming off the bench at the beginning of the season. And, you know, it was a lot of roster change, but once I started producing off the bench, I mean, it was no doubt I was the best player on the team. I'm scoring 28 off the bench, 35 off the bench, 15, and I didn't miss a shot. Like, it was like, nah, this kid's our best scorer, and he's coming off the bench. And I remember specifically Coach A, he's at Clayton State now. He said, you know, we've been talking with the staff, Q, and we were like, you want to come off the bench, or do you want to keep coming off the bench, or do you want to start? And in my mind, I was like, you know, if I keep coming off the bench, I'll be going up against people's second unit. I can kill for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
And then I sat down. I closed my phone, and I was like, what am I doing? Like, I work to be the best in the country.
Mm-hmm.
What do I sound like telling myself I want to kill against the second group?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just remember telling him, no, I want to start. Forget all that. Start me. Mm-hmm. And the rest is history.
Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. So you touched on a lot of things that I kind of want to get into. One of the things, let's start with this, because you mentioned like the body transformation around that time. I think it's so necessary in the modern NBA, for guards to have that level of like strength and power in addition to this speed. And that's something that really kind of pops off the film for you, is like, you're one of those guys that's like, people aren't really going to like get through you physically. How does your level of like strength and toughness help you on the court, whether it's offense, defense, like wherever? What does that do for you? Because I was really surprised when you're talking about like running cross country earlier. Yeah, I was like, really, this is not a dude I would have had. He's like, oh yeah, he's like a cross country style really athlete. Good. Like, it's so far opposite of that now.
Nah, yeah, my 5Ks, I was like 15 minutes, 16 minutes. Like, I was good. Like, my coach said if I stayed with it, I could have been like a Division I cross country runner. That's how good I was. Like, I was running cross country meets, the fly knit Nikes with no socks. Like,
oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, I was one.
I was like a discus thrower and shot putter, so I was around like, yeah, like the cross country like distance guys who, yeah, have those shoes and no socks thing, like the whole deal. Yeah.
But it kind of started like my senior year of high school. After the season, I had never been in the weight room for real,
mm-hmm.
for real, until after my senior year of high school. And I worked out with Chase Hunter for a while. Like, that's like,
oh yeah, favorite. Yeah, big dude.
And, mm-hmm. and so he was always in the weight room, but I was never in the weight room. And so once I started working out with him and seeing what the weight room was really like, I saw why he attacked the basket with so much confidence, with so much power. And once I started getting it, I was like, no, this is useful. And so I started to develop a love for the weight room, just because I started to not only see the results on the court, but see the results off the court. I got my,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, women say I look good, you know,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
you know, but we got to college my freshman year and I just bulked up. Like, mm-hmm. I was about almost 200, but I just felt heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I lost so much weight after my freshman year. Cause I said, I just didn't want to be 200. I didn't feel good. And every year it was kind of like a different thing in the weight room. My sophomore year was all about, I focused a lot on mobility, ankle strength, ankle mobility, toe strength, toe mobility, just like core. Like, I worked on a lot of other stuff. That was what I told my coach at the time, Coach Blackburn. That's what makes me feel the best. I feel the strongest. I feel the fastest. I feel the quickest when I'm skinnier, but my core is good. Like, if my core is good, I'm fine. I can do the biceps. I was still squatting pretty heavy. What, mm-hmm. maybe 250. Mm-hmm. I was benching pretty light, 185, 190, maybe, I think it might be 205. But I was like, all I care about is my core.
Yeah.
Because at that point, I feel good. My junior year, a lot of up and down, you know, a lot of up and down. I'll admit, that was when I broke my wrist. So I was just kind of, eh. But my senior year at Rice, I was just like, nah, I just want to come back strong. I want to come back feeling a little good, but I want to be around 195,
mm-hmm.
200. And just kind of noticing like how attacking the lane, lowering my shoulder and kind of getting contact on my shoulder was important. And it helped when I was going to the paint. But it wasn't until I got to Xavier where I really knew how important that weight room was. That's I had the shoulders my senior year of college, mm-hmm. like at Rice. But I didn't really get the shoulders until last year at Xavier. And
yeah,
actually, a lot of people don't know, I actually got hit by a car, so I have a nice scar on my shoulder.
Oh man, okay.
And that was ironically like when I was working out my sophomore year after the season. That's when we bulked up, and I was like really bulky, really bulky, mm-hmm. like for real, for real. And I had some good shoulders. My shoulders actually saved me from like really getting damaged when I got mm-hmm. hit by that car. My shoulders really saved me. So if y'all, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if you'll be at Portsmouth, but when I have my jersey, mm-hmm. I'll have a, you'll see my scar on my left shoulder. But my shoulders is like some people joke about on the team, because they're very broad.
Yeah, yeah.
When I'm attacking the paint and I'm attack and I try to bump somebody or somebody bumps me, or if I put my hands up and they bump my chest, I'm not flying back unless I'm flopping. I'm not flying back as I used to, because I realize how important the weight room is and how being strong not only affects offense, but it greatly affects defense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's huge. And the other thing I want to touch on is just sort of the guys that you played with at Xavier and how that shaped your game. Because I think people that, again, like if a lot of times people in the draft space, and like, I don't mean this like a negative way, will kind of just pay attention to guys like once they're like really on the radar. So people like just watched you this year at Xavier, they see like leading option. During your time at Rice, like you mentioned, Drew Peterson was there, Trey Murphy was there. They played a lot through Max Fiedler. Travis Evie would create some offense. Like, you also became pretty adept at like playing off of other guys. That's like a real strength of yours. Can you talk about the development of that and how you think that might pay off at the next level?
Yeah, that goes all the way back to AAU. Like I told you, I was never the guy. You know, I was always sitting in the corner and shooting. So I was always used to playing second or being off the ball and getting open. Growing up, I watched a lot of I tried to think I was in like seventh grade, and I think his name was Coach Miles. He said, you should really watch Bradley Beal. And like sixth, seventh grade, I watched a lot of Bradley Beal, and he was a two guard, played off the ball, not really much of a bar in it. Cause I'm not really much of a ISO go get like all that wastes too much energy, man. Like, let me come off the rock, ask for a go screen, come off a screen, come off a stagger screen, do something, and then let's create some space there. But I'm not all the tween cross behind, step back, fake, hezzy. That's too much energy. Rob Dillingham is really good at that.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't do that.
There's no shame in that. That's not my game,
you know. And that, like I said, that started at a young age. And as I got older, I was always playing with someone who was considered the better player on the team. So they had the ball in their hand, and I had to play off them. And as I got older, I got to high school. I was on ninth grade. I was the better player, so I was getting the ball, but I was still learning what to do with that. I would watch other people. I watched a lot of shooting guards. Then as I finally got to varsity, Chase Hunter was there. Chase Hunter was the primary bar, and so I learned how to play off ball with another great player who was going to Clemson, Chase Hunter. I learned that, and then I got to college, played with Drew, played with Trey, and they had the ball in their hands a lot more, so I'm waiting on them how to get open, what are other ways I can move without the ball, learn that. Go up to get older. Max has the ball. He has it at the top of the key, running around, trying to get open, setting screen, back screen, doing this, cutting, playing off the ball. Then I get to Xavier. We run our flow offense, hit the top of the key, or Davion hits me, I hit someone else. We running around, I'm playing off the ball. It's honestly been my whole life. That I've never had a point where I had to change how I play, because I've always just learned to play off the ball. Mm-hmm. And as the NBA has changed from when I was five
to
22, it's almost as if my game has stayed consistent. It's been able to translate at every level, because I've never been the 20 dribbles type of guy. And I give a lot of credit to Coach Emery. I mean, he passed two years ago. But he taught me at a young age footwork, playing hard and hustling and sprinting to the corner in transition will always get you paid. And I was fifth grade.
You're like getting paid. You know,
became the human torch, and we were shooting 33s a game. I was still, you know, and he told me back then, and he taught me how to play off the ball at that age. It's not standing when someone has the ball. You can make a cut, set a screen for somebody, and he said it'll get you paid. And when I look at the position I'm in now, I think my game can greatly translate, because let's say I'm watching the Phoenix Suns and Devin Booker's working out in the middle of the floor, 5-4-3-2 skips to the corner. I'm already ready. I can shoot a corner three. Like, I shoot the ball, you know, and catch a sweet shot. That's something I can do. You don't need to pass it to me. And, oh, I need to do all this. And I don't need to do all that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, my game translates.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. One of the things I was going to bring up is, like, again, like, just one of those things that is valuable for guards in the modern NBA is, I call it on and off ball equity. Like, can you do something on the ball? Can you do something off the ball? It is, like, the synergy numbers. Like, you were 90th percentile pick and roll, 85th percentile spot ups, 93rd percentile of handoffs. So, like, whether these are play types that involve you leading the offense or you coming off of somebody else's offense or moving into offense. Like you've done really well with that. Do you think that was a part of you? I mean, having the success that you did at Xavier? Cause a lot of times we see these guys that move up from the mid-major level to a high major level and it just doesn't happen for them.
Most definitely.
You posted that. Like career highs in like a couple areas this year. Do you think it was just that comfort of being able to kind of play with whoever, however?
Nah, for sure. And it was all mental. You know, how bad did I want it to work out? How bad did I want to come in and be great and accept the challenge of being at a higher level and then just working at it? Like, I worked my tail off. And that's the thing. Like, I'm one of the more driven, goal-oriented people that a lot of people know. Like, if I put my mind on something, if I say I want to do something, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. And I said I wanted to, when I transfer, I want to play at the highest level and see how I fare against people that are also the best athletes in the world that are potential draft picks. And I said that at Rice, like, I think I'm a pro. I'm an NBA player. And I told myself, well, it's time. Like, I'm about to play in the Big East. UConn, Providence, Seton Hall, St. John's, Creighton, you know, Marquette. Like, these are teams that are in a tournament every year that have a potential first-round pick, that have potential NBA players. I say I'm a pro. It's time to see what I can do. And so I put in countless work over the summer. I worked out with Coach Manny. We were down in Keene, Texas. And we just watched. He watched a lot of offense as Xavier ran, and we just worked out a lot and just trying to put me in sets in the workout that would translate to the game, which is handoffs or sprint to the corner or hit me early, pitch back, which is like pistol action, Spain action, you know, things like that. Just hitting shots on stop behind threes or handoff threes and stuff like that. Just attacking downhill. Just to kind of like put me in a mindset of these are the type of shots I'm going to get. So just be ready for it. I mean, like I said, I'm not the dribble, 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 get a screen, split screen, step back, get a switch, back up to half court, right my feet. Like, I'm not that guy, you know?
Yeah.
So we just did our best to try to replicate the offense in our workouts so I can be as best prepared for my shots in the game.
For sure. How much confidence did you gain over this past year between like just like having a good performance in like the Reese's College All-Star game, which like people, you know, some people might be like, oh, it's an exhibition or whatever, but you mentioned the Big East, there's all this NBA talent in the conference, particularly at the guard spot. We're talking Devin Carter, we're talking Tyler Kolek, Trey Alexander, like just even like the Seton Hall guards just have like a real level of like toughness and size to them. Like, it's a really good guard league this year. How did going through that and playing successfully, like you shot, I mean, you scored, you know, 19 a game, you shot 41% from three. Like, what did that do anything for you? Like, just getting to see those kind of results and playing that kind of talent?
Tremendously. I mean, once I got that groove after Thanksgiving, I remember telling myself, this feels a lot like Rice. Once I got in that mode, it was over with. And when we play St. John's first Big East game and I'm running the fast break and Rick Pitino's yelling, don't leave him. Don't leave him. Don't let him touch you. Like, Rick Pitino is telling you that. And then right after that game, Coach Cohen is telling me, like, I'm going to be good. We were just caught off guard. We're going to have you ready. Next game, Seton Hall, I had 29. Should have had 30 because I missed a free throw. At 29, you know, second Big East game of the year. 29 points in the best conference in the country. And so I'm like, oh, okay. And as I'm continue to go, I'm at the top of everybody's scout. Some teams double teaming me, like Coach Hurley telling me I'm one of the best players in the conference. Shaka Smart telling me I'm one of the best players in the conference. You know, Coach McDermott from Creighton telling me he has a lot of respect for my game, and a lot of people just showing a lot of respect for me. And even if they don't tell me, I mean, their game plan tells me everything I need to know.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
You having, instead of, let's just say, for example, instead of Josh Oduro dropping, when I get the ball, you got him jumping.
Yeah.
I can get the ball out of my hands like that. That's a Soto sign of respect. Like, no, you need to get the ball out of his hands, because if not, you know, he's gonna do damage. And I remember specifically the second time we played UConn. at the XL Center because Tristan Newton was denying me the ball the first time we played him. I had like 20, and he started denying me like 8 minutes left in the game. He's denying me the ball. We tipped the ball off the XL Center. I don't know if we won the tip or not. I don't think we did. But as soon as we got the ball, Tristan Newton is denying me full court. Full court. It's 2-0.
Yeah.
I said, bro, the game just started. He said, Coach Hurley said, nah, not this time. And, you know, it's like respect like that. Like, hold on. I'm in arguably the best conference in the country. Mm-hmm. I'm at the top of people's scouting reports. This is basically exactly how it was at Rice, but on the national stage. I can play with the best of the best. I belong here. I can do this. And it was amazing. You know, after the season ended, I told my uncle and I told my mom, I told my dad, I told a lot of people, I said, this is the most confident I've ever been that I can play in the NBA in my life. Mm-hmm. Because this year has showed it. And then I go to the Reese's game and I led my team in scoring. It was a great experience playing on the Final Four. I posted something on my Instagram right before the game. 5 years ago when the Final Four was in Minnesota, me and my dad went to the Final Four Saturday, that event. And when we went to the Friday practices, we went to watch the practices in the All-Star game. Mm-hmm. And that was 5 years ago. 5 years later, I'm in the game. You know, mm-hmm. I got to watch a couple of the practices. It's just my story. When the full story comes out, it's going to be crazy just how my life came full circle the way it did, because my life is really a movie. Like, it's really a movie. And people say that it's very cliche, but my journey is really a movie. Like, I got hit by a car.
Yeah.
That's crazy. I broke my wrist, no surgery. Like, mm-hmm. I got sick one summer and lost 20 pounds. While I was in college, I won't let you guess what summer that was. That summer I got sick. Mm-hmm. I didn't eat for 8 days straight, was sick for 2 weeks, and lost 20 pounds.
Man, that's crazy. It's unbelievable that you're in the position that you're in now, and we're so excited to see where it goes. Want to touch on your defense for a little bit, because I think it can get slept on at times. One of the things that stands out about your game is you're a really good rebounder for a guard, and just like, historically, from a data perspective, if you're a guard that rebounds, your chances of sticking in the NBA are much better. Like, it matters. And a lot of people don't think that. A lot of people don't, like, put together, like, oh, you know, it doesn't really matter if I got rebounds or not. It does. Where did that element of your game come from? Was that one of those things you picked up just being, like, that role player kind of guy where it's like, well, I got to do something to be on the court? Or
yeah, it the stat sheet just never looked good if it was all points, one assist, zero rebound. Not attractive.
Yeah, no, it's not.
I started crashing a little bit, but my uncle Andrew, he told me and Chase this. And I will never ever forget this. He said, if you go get a rebound and you get the rebound, you don't have to ask for the ball from anyone because you have it in your hands. Mm-hmm. And one thing about me and Chase, you don't have to tell me and Chase twice how to go get the ball. Mm-hmm. And once I started just realizing, like, I'm going up to get the rebound, I'm getting a lot of these. Like, mm-hmm. I'm going up, I'm feeling strong when I go get it. And then I'm pushing on the fast break. Like, this is fun.
Yeah.
I want to do it again. And it became like, oh, wait, I can really rebound. Oh, wait, I got 9 rebounds. Hold on. Oh, wait, I got 11 rebounds. Like, I used to dream about a double-double. That's how easy it is to just go up and get a rebound. Like,
yeah.
The big men are battling. So they mm-hmm. they gonna battle. Yeah. Sometimes they occupy, but mm-hmm. sometimes my man is getting back.
I'm
flying to go get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I mean, obviously I didn't play at the level you played at, but like when I played, I played the big man spots, and it was always so. I think it's really frustrating for the other team's bigs when, like you said, like you're battling, and then someone else isn't boxing out, and then you've got that guard that flies in, and whether it's a putback or defensive rebound or whatever, like. I think it just kind of grates on the other team a little bit too. Like, it's just kind of annoying when there's a guard that's kind of getting in on the glass time and time again.
It's fun. It makes the box score look a little bit better. 14-6-3 looks mm-hmm. way
yeah,
better.
Yeah.
14-1-1.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then let's talk about your defense a little bit. We talked about your strength a little bit. I think that's one of the, like, your biggest strengths, no pun intended, on that side of the ball. what like positions do you kind of see yourself guarding at the next level?
One through three. I mean, mm-hmm. you could say four. You know, it's a switching league, but you know, definitely one through three. I mean, once I kind of pick up on different defensive principles, I think it'll definitely help. You know, because obviously a lot of teams do different things based on matchups, based on mm-hmm. Who's in the game and things like that. But for the most part, once I pick up on the principles, I think one through three. I mean, like I said, potential four would it be in a switching league? Because I mean, who knows who the four could be at a time? Mm-hmm. Like if a team's running an extremely small lineup,
sure, yeah.
Because a two or three could be the four, but yeah, I would say one through four. I would hope it's an NBA team that doesn't have me trying to guard a five man like Steven Adams. Or something.
Yeah.
But nah, for the most part, I think I would say one through three, and depending on the matchup, potentially a four.
Yeah, and I think that's something again that just kind of differentiates you a little bit, because you see now like so many teams try to like hunt the height mismatch, and like that wasn't working on you in the film this year. Like a couple teams went for it and didn't have great success. Do you like practice for that at all? Because like teams scored really poorly against you on the block this year, or is that just kind of a want to and toughness?
It's just a want, like, because I'm like, yeah, bro, yeah, yeah. You're not gonna punk me, dog. I'm 25, like eight reps, like come on, bro, let's have some fun. I just didn't want to be that guy, because then I don't want nobody running down the court doing a two little celebration.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Now I gotta get a bucket. Now we gotta turn a 5-on-5 game in front of all these fans into a 1-on-1 pickup game, because you're trying to punk me on TV.
Mm-hmm. What have you been working on most kind of in the lead up to the draft? I know like the college season just ended, like we haven't had a ton of time, but is there anything in your game that you're excited to show people, either say, hey, this is something I did during college and I've gotten better at it, or hey, this is a wrinkle that maybe just due to role or fit, I didn't really get to show off a lot. Like, is there anything that you're excited for teams to see either during Portsmouth or these other pre-draft events or team workouts that might catch people a little bit off guard?
Playmaking and reads for sure. Mm-hmm. And then obviously defense, you can never not show enough defense. I think a lot of people know that I can score the ball. You know, that's what I've been doing since I've been in college. But I've averaged 2 assists the past few years, just showing that I can really pass the ball, and defense for sure.
Mm-hmm. How challenging was it for you being a guy that like to me comes across as really competitive? I know a lot of times, if you are a leading scoring option on a college team, coaches will really stress to stay out of foul trouble. How was it to kind of deal with like that at the college level, where you know like coach doesn't want me to foul, and how that can kind of limit you defensively?
Oh yeah, it was tough because a lot of games they call touch fouls, a lot of games they wouldn't call anything, and I'm like, once you figured out how they were calling the game, it was fun. I mean, obviously mm-hmm. every college player in the first half, if they get 2, they begging the coach to let them stay. I had to do that a couple of times, but you know, it's all about having a feel for the game. Like if we're playing a game against, let's say, Seton Hall, where they're mm-hmm. very, very aggressive, it's a lot of bang bang stuff. You can be a little bit more physical in the post. You can bump a little bit. You can try to do a wraparound steal. But if you play another game, I'm just gonna make up another team in the
beat. Sure, yeah.
Let's say we're playing UConn and we're at Centos,
mm-hmm.
we're the underdogs. Maybe the ref might call a little wraparound play on Steph Castle just because it's contact, you know. But it really all depends on the ref and how they're calling the game, how physical you want to be on defense.
For sure. Last one, I like to kind of throw at everybody. Obviously, you've got a great pro basketball career ahead of you. Whenever that is over with and your days as a player are done, do you have anything that you want to do after?
Oh yeah, for sure. I'm gonna be on TV.
I love talking about
the game. Mm-hmm. I love commentating. Like I love that. I love talking about basketball. Mm-hmm. And I think I definitely have the confidence to do that in front of a camera, do that for a TV network. And mm-hmm. I mean, like I said, I've been around it all my life. That's what my dad used to do.
Yeah,
with the Hawks Media, and then he worked for Georgia Public Broadcasting doing that reporting on high school sports. So I definitely like have watched a lot of that and lived that growing up, and that's mm-hmm. something I definitely think I can do I'm very charismatic and I'm not shy and I'm very outgoing. And you put a mic, you can ask me a question right now, like interview you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've been killing it. I'm worried that you're going to take my job, man. I gotta end this now. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, nah, yeah. You're good. I definitely, a broadcaster or a TV analyst.
For sure. I could see it. I think you'd be a great fit for that. For people who kind of want to keep following along with your journey, where can they find you on social media?
It's just my name, Quincy Oliveri, on Twitter, on Instagram. Is there any other main platforms? I think that's it.
Yeah.
YouTube is Quincy Oliveri. My dad used to make my mixtapes in high school. So if y'all want to catch my high school tapes, that was made by Gerald Oliveri, filmed by Gerald Oliveri. That's really it.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate it. Make sure you're following Quincy on social media. You can follow us at No Ceilings NBA and me at Boundboards on Twitter. So thank you all so much for joining us. Quincy, best luck to you here during the pre-draft process.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Welcome to another prospect interview from the No Ceilings NBA YouTube channel and podcast feed. I am Maxwell Baumbach, and today I am joined by Liberty's Kyle Rode. Kyle, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, man. Excited to be on.
For sure. Yeah, I was super glad to be able to connect with you. He is a participant in this year's Portsmouth Invitational, the 70th annual Portsmouth Invitational. So anytime guys are in the field, we love to try and reach out and get them on the show. Kyle was super accommodating and being able to make this happen, so we appreciate that. The first thing I always like to ask any player that we get on the show is, how do you describe your game to someone who hasn't seen you before? Because you get a lot of people that, you know, just start parachuting in right now. Their team's not in the playoffs, and they want to know, hey, who are these guys in the draft this year? So if someone's just dipping their toes in the pool, they're not familiar with you, how do you describe your game?
Yeah, I'd describe it as somebody who loves hoops, man. Like, since I was 8 years old, I started traveling and playing, and I've loved it ever since. So I love watching hoops. I think I'm one of the most high IQ players in this year's draft class, and also just have a good feel and versatile. I love to shoot the ball, get other guys involved, and I love to win. So just try to show my toughness and physicality, and whatever the coach or whatever the team needs me to do at that point in time, feel like I can do it at a high level. But super into basketball, and that's the best way I could describe it.
For sure. Yeah. And people who followed my written work this year know that I personally gravitate towards the guys that are tall, that can shoot and take care of the ball and are physical. So like, you're kind of my type of player. So another reason you were one of the guys I reached out to in the field. But yeah, I think that was spot on. You mentioned getting into basketball at like a pretty young age. What was it that got you into basketball? Was there anything in particular that really grabbed you early on that made you want to pursue basketball?
Well, I think growing up in Lexington, Kentucky, they take it pretty serious. So
yeah.
From a young age, man, you're ingrained to grow up loving hoops. So I think just watching the Cats growing up was obviously huge, and I just had a passion for it. So luckily I had a great family, and that allowed me to play AU from a young age and travel all across the country and make those sacrifices. And then being able to have a scholarship to play at Liberty was a dream of mine, playing Division I college basketball. And now here we are post-grad and ready for a new chapter. So super excited. It's crazy going from 8 years old to now, but it's been a really cool journey.
Yeah, it's incredible to get to watch. And like I mentioned to you, and like with a lot of guys that I talked to, it's really cool. What I love about Portsmouth is that these are guys that we've gotten to see develop over multiple years. So, you know, we get to see kind of the development from like, here's this guy as a role player, here's this guy as a number two, and now here's this guy as a leading option and things like that. And just getting to see that, even that side of it, not even going back to when you're 8 years old, is such a joy for us on our side to get to see it. You mentioned playing at Liberty. What was it that initially led you there? And like, what was your recruitment like, and what kind of made you go with Liberty, the options that you had at that time?
Yeah, I'd say probably every recruit that is committed to Liberty says probably Coach McKay is their biggest factor as a coach. And he just does an unbelievable job of making you feel welcomed, and the relationship is going to be not just transactional, your stats on the basketball court, but somebody that cares about you for your 4 years and then however many years after that. So Coach McKay was definitely a big thing. My faith was a big part. It was a Christian school, and growing up had an amazing experience at my school in Lexington, LCA. And So just really, really love the feel of the campus. The guys were unbelievable on my visits, and it's actually crazy. I committed to Liberty, and they hadn't won a conference championship yet. And then the next year, they upset Mississippi State in the NCAA tournament. So it was pretty cool already being committed and have that happen. And every one of those guys pretty much came back. So as a freshman, like you said, the development of being a role player on that team that went 30-4, and COVID cancels the tournament. So we were looking to be 11 or 12 seed that year. But just to come into Liberty and with so many great guys, and like you said, in the recruitment process, everything they told me was exactly how it was. So I really respected them for that and have nothing but appreciation for that school.
Yeah. So, and this actually kind of leads into another question I wanted to ask you. Obviously you had success developing there year over year. Liberty has had success as a basketball program year over year. And guys don't seem to leave in an era where a lot of guys leave. So like yourself, Darius McGee, like you guys saw it through there. Why do you think they've been able to retain talent? Is it just Coach McKay, or is it like, I guess, what did you get out of the playing experience at Liberty that you just said, like, I'm not even like thinking.
Yeah, no, 100%, man. I think it has to do with everything. Like, I think at Liberty, you can play high level basketball, especially moving off conferences in the CUSA now, and play high level basketball. It's a great school, great university, and you get to pursue everything you want at a high level. So there's really, you can develop there. You have your guys that you came in with there, and get to see them grow and develop. And obviously for me, it was one of those things too, where I wanted to make one of those runs that I saw as a senior in high school, and then being a part of it my freshman year a little bit. Like, you wanted to be a part of that mid-major kind of Cinderella, if you will. So even though it didn't happen for us this year, I know they're going to be doing so many great things in the CUSA moving forward. And just so grateful that I got to stick it out. And like you mentioned, Darius McGee's best player to ever play there. So pretty cool that he stayed for his COVID year, even when he probably had big offers, let's say, to go.
Yeah, elsewhere. I'm sure. Yeah. One of the best scorers in recent history in college basketball. Yeah. And that like actually kind of brings me to my next question. This is flowing wonderfully. So I appreciate the way you're answering these. So my next question was, you play alongside Darius McGee, who is like this excellent point guard, phenomenal scorer. And then this year, he's moved on, he's playing professionally, and you kind of had to step a little bit more into that sort of leading option sort of a role. How was that adjustment for you, and what do you feel like you kind of learned from that as a player?
Yeah, I think my game it definitely developed helping playing with a guy like Darius. He just helps you in so many ways, right? Makes it so much easier. He's got so much gravity when he has the ball in his hand, so you get two or three wide open looks at you don't now get anymore, and just things like that. But no, I think it really taught me how to kind of connect an offense, right? From a forward kind of position. It allowed me to kind of play point forward and play and connect him, get him shots, and find ways for our offense to flow. And Coach McKay kind of gave me the keys in that role of, hey, you might not be the point guard, but you make our actions go, you tie them together. And that's where I really feel like I've learned and grown and been able to kind of do that at the next level as well, as somebody that doesn't need the ball in their hands to help make an offense go and click and just like, oh, that looks right kind of deal.
Yes. So, yeah, absolutely.
So being a little different this year, and we obviously had some guys step up and had a great addition in the transfer portal with Caden Matheny. And so it was just a different look this year, right? But it was still super grateful for the experience, and I got to show probably my 3-point shot a little more than I had in years past. But just super, super unique years every year I played there and felt like I developed.
Yeah. So let's talk about the 3-point shot, because that was kind of what drew me to you initially on those Darius McGee teams, was, hey, here's a guy who's 6'7" who can shoot. You'd always shot a good percentage from three. Like, you don't have a single year below 36.5. And then last, like the 2 years before this, you were 42.5, 39.9. This year, you were at 38.8, but the volume was crazy. You took 8.1 per game, which is almost 16 per 100 possessions, which for nerds like me, we love the per 100 possessions numbers. Really high volume and really great efficiency. How did you get your shot to that point?
Yeah, it was actually super cool. I think My junior year of high school, a guy named Kyle Macy played for the Chicago Bulls, legend in Lexington, won a national championship, whatever. And just an amazing guy. He actually coached tennis at my high school. And my now wife, girlfriend at the time, she was on the tennis team. And he was her tennis coach. So you have a Hall of Fame NCAA champion basketball player, just a random tennis coach at a high school.
Coach of tennis. That's
nuts. And I'm in the gym in the morning before school, kind of normal routine. And they had some breakfast. And he stopped by the gym and helped me with my jump shot a little bit my junior and senior year. So that kind of laid a foundation for what I was able to do in college. And then from college, like I said, Coach McKay and staff just develops you so much. So I'd probably give a lot of credit to Coach Macy in that department, but also the Liberty staff helped me develop it just even beyond. So it was really cool.
For sure. And I think one of the things that I look for in a shooter is how do they get to their shots? And I think one of the things that makes you pretty unique is that you're 6'7", the Liberty website lists your weight at 220. Yeah. So you're one of those guys where you have the footwork to come off of screens, but you also have the strength and the willingness to set screens and operate as like a pick and pop guy. So you can kind of get to your shot in a variety of different ways. Is that something that took time for you? Like, did you go from being more of a standstill guy to being someone who is a movement shooter? And what does that process look like as far as repping it out and getting it to that level?
Yeah, 100%, man. I think just your freshman year, right? You have so many guys around and you're just kind of not stand in the corner and just shoot that, but like, mm-hmm. that's kind of your role. So that's what you focus on more in practice. And then obviously from there, you kind of get confidence and gain a bigger role in the offense to where they're needing you to pick and pop some, they're needing to set you some in screens to get you looks, whether that's in the corner or some down screens to get you some pin down shots and things like that. So I think it just develops kind of as your role, and the offense kind of needs some buckets. So I thought, especially this year, had some unbelievable passers around me. Mm-hmm. I thought we had probably three or four guys average over 2.5 assists a game. So really shared the ball and had some great screeners too. So got to give credit to those guys, but definitely something I developed over my college career for sure.
For sure. Yeah. And let's talk about the passing, because that is something that definitely stands out in your game. And you mentioned, Matheny earlier, Zach Cleveland, who's an Illinois guy as well. Yeah. Someone in Illinois, always pulling for our guys here. you're a really great passer. And that's something that matters a lot as you scale up, especially like the connective type, just like swing, quick next one style decision-making where you're not going to have the ball in your hands for a long time. But if you need to, you're capable of that too. You were 92nd percentile on synergy and pick and rolls this year. Where did that passing come from? It's like a 6'7", strong player. Like, it's not like usually like that's not the type of guy that you feel like great about like putting it on the deck running a ball screen or just even making those swing passes is something that a lot of guys struggle with. Like, where did that passing come from?
Yeah, I think from a young age, like it was kind of funny. I always got in trouble because I liked to pass too much growing up. So you always had the coaches telling me to be more aggressive. And I just honestly love getting guys involved and I love watching the game. So I feel like I have a really good read of where people are going to be on the court. So I can see the game at a high level. And also that just allows me to trust my instincts and trust what I'm seeing and make the pass. But I also had an amazing high school coach that allowed me to run the point because we were actually really tall in high school. So I was able to run the point some, and in the city of Lexington, everybody presses. So got some experience handling the ball against pressure and playing in some pick and rolls with some really good guys in high school. And Coach McKay obviously let me continue to do that in college some. So I was super, super grateful that they just didn't stick me inside and
make you post up guy. Yeah.
So it's paid off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone who's only allowed to post up. I don't think it would have mattered if they let me shoot. I don't have much range, but yeah, it's definitely a lot more fun to get to be on the perimeter and get to do those things. So one of the things that I think comes up a lot, especially with guys that are kind of like these forward shooter types, is, you know, where's this guy athletically? Like, what position is he going to guard best at the NBA level? How do you feel about like your athleticism in comparison to other guys in the field? And like, defensively, where do you feel most comfortable? Like, are you kind of like a three defender, four defender? What do you kind of see yourself as?
Yeah, 100%. I think just honestly from time I was kind of younger, like I was never the most athletic guy, never the most switchy guy, but Like I said before, I feel like my toughness and IQ for the game really helps me defensively, just knowing what kind of shots I want the offensive guy to take. So trying to force him into some of those looks and having a great feel for defensive rotations and our system. So I feel comfortable guarding threes and fours and even some twos when I have to. So I feel like the NBA, so you have to be able to switch, right? So being able to guard your yard for some switching and things like that is something I've been working on this off season even more. So Coach McKay's an unbelievable defensive mind. So in the last 5 years, got to just develop under him and learn just how to play sound defense. So really feel like whatever system I'm in, I'll be able to pick it up quickly and I'm tough enough to whatever the defense assignment is to hold my own.
Mm-hmm. And I think physicality does play a pretty big role in that. It's something that I've noticed in my time is these guys that come in with some weight on their bones and just the toughness to even throw their body on a guy, it can go a long way. Can you just talk about the importance of having that strength to you, both on defense and on offense?
Yeah, 100%. I've actually been so blessed with two amazing strength coaches at my time at Liberty. Henry Barrera, he's now at Alabama, was just in the Final Four, and Coach Hornet, he's an amazing strength coach, and had them both at Liberty, and they just have done an unbelievable job of helping you use that strength too, because you'll see guys that maybe have strength but don't move as well with it, right? So just being able to leverage that strength and watching even some tape on some NBA guys that do a really good job of that. Drew Holiday, obviously one of the best defenders in the league, just his ability and strength. I was actually talking to one of my guys about that the other day defensively. So I just think it's about how you leverage it, man, and the ability to move and the guys in the NBA are so good. So it's just your ability to make them as uncomfortable as possible. And sometimes they're going to hit better shots than your defense can even be.
Yeah. that's a tough part of life in the NBA sometimes you have a possession where you do everything right defensively and a guy still just hits a shot. What have you been sort of working on most in the pre-draft process? Is there any element of your game that you're in? And obviously we're early, like the college season did not wrap up a long time ago. We're in early April here, but is there an element of your game that you're excited to show, like, hey, I've taken strides here, or this is a new wrinkle that maybe people haven't seen? Like, is there anything that you're kind of excited to put on display at Portsmouth?
Yeah, I think obviously my ability to shoot the ball, I think it'll be at a high level in Portsmouth, especially there's so many good guards that are playing this invitational. And I know they love having shooters around them that could get assists, right? So I'll obviously show that. And I think just my decision-making on closeouts too, I'm really working on some of those reads and ability to get into the paint, make the right pass, make the right scoring option too when that's available. So been playing a lot out of closeouts, playing a lot out of just my pick and pop situations, some of my in screen situations where I'm catching and shooting from NBA line, which we actually had a 4-point line at Liberty in practice.
So
that's really helped for spacing and just the ability to shoot the ball from that 4-point line has really helped my game for sure. So I'm excited to show that I can handle the ball too. Like, I think sometimes at the mid-major level you can get stuck playing some 4 and 5 some. So you might not have that roller lob threat or you're kind of not maybe handling the ball as much on handoff. So just ability to show my passing and some of those other elements is really what I've been focusing on.
For sure. For sure. I'm excited to see that. I'm sure a lot of people listening are as well. One thing I always just kind of like to throw out at the end is whenever your basketball playing days are over with, do you have a thing that you want to do after playing basketball? And it can be, if you're still in basketball, that's fine. If it's something completely unrelated, that's cool too. But always just curious to hear that.
Yeah, I don't think I can leave the game, man. I'll probably end up being a coach. I have had a couple. I've had a lawn mowing business in my time, in my high school years, and I've prepped a lawn company. So I'm a little entrepreneur too in that regard. So you never know what that could entail. Get on Shark Tank with something, but I'll probably stay around hoops, man. I love it too much.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm right there with you. Where can people find you on social media if they want to follow along with your journey?
Yeah, I think on social media, my last name is probably the hardest to spell. It's just RODE. So just Kyle Rode. You'll be able to find me on Twitter, Instagram. It's just Kyle Rode 22. So I keep it pretty basic on social media. I keep up with what I need to keep up with.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. Everybody listening, make sure you're following along with Kyle's journey as well as all of our coverage of the Portsmouth Invitational at NoCeilingsNBA.com. You can find me at Boundboards on Twitter and us at NoCeilingsNBA. Thank you so much for joining us, Kyle. Thank you again for joining us here tonight.
Thanks, man. You're high level. Appreciate you.
All right. Take care.